Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
I like tech chat and I cannot lie. You other chatters can't deny that when a girl walks in with an interest in tech and she asks you for a chat, you get the UK Tech Weekly Podcast. Hello, long-suffering listeners, and welcome to this latest outbreak of antibiotic-resistant UK Tech Weekly Podcast, the UK's least thoroughly drug-tested weekly tech podcast, puttering gently around the velodrome of your mind like a slow-moving scooter. The UK Tech Weekly Podcast is an infotainment power ballad sung by the editors of PC Advisor, Tech World, Macworld UK and Computer World UK. Every Friday we head to an audio kindergarten, raising our audio knees, crying for our audio mums and eating a dangerous number of audio crayons in order to bring you no more than 40 minutes of informed chat on the hot tech topics of the past 7 days. Don't forget to subscribe, review and tell your friends. I'm David Price, acting editor of Macworld UK, and today I am delighted to be joined in discussion by Sir Mix-a-Lot, Henry Burrell, staff writer on PC Advisor and Macworld.
Morning.
Sir Drinks-a-Lot, Charlotte G, editor of Techworld.
Hello, I suppose.
And Sir Thanks-a-Lot, but no thanks-a-lot, Lewis Painter, staff writer on PC Advisor and Macworld.
Hello.
This week we are talking games, phone security, and vehicles with a mind of their own. Uh-oh, SpaghettiOs! Lewis Painter, I hear that you're game for Gamescom. What's new in the world of gaming?
Well, Gamescom is on at the moment in Germany. First of all, do we know why it's called Gamescom and not Gamescon?
I don't.
No.
That's a really good question.
Con would be convention.
Yes.
Yeah.
Com. Comedy.
Games.com.
Comedy.
What's the
no,
German?
Someone stop Henry's malfunctioning.
We need to reset him. Stop.
Thanks, guys.
I'm pretty sure it's not German.
I suppose it doesn't matter.
This is really confusing. Yeah.
Let's find out.
Let's just go on. Tell us if you know. Yeah, it's a huge gaming convention. Last year, it was, you know, insane because, you know, you had all these companies there. They were doing press conferences. They were announcing new games, new footage, all this kind of stuff. It was lovely. Whereas this time around, it's not quite as exciting. You've got trailers.
You're really going to bring in the listeners with that.
I know, yeah.
This time it's rubbish.
I mean, you've got new trailers. You've got some new info. You're actually saying that. You've got Metal Gear Survive, which is the first Metal Gear game to be developed without Hideo Kojima, which is the guy, the mastermind behind the Metal Gear series. And it looks...
Why is he not involved?
There was a lot of drama. when Metal Gear came out, the last Metal Gear Solid came out, there was a lot of drama between him and the company in general. And basically he left and now he's making his own game, which is really cool. It's called Death Stranding. It got its debut at E3. Mm. And it uses Norman Reedus. He's the main character in the game from The Walking Dead. And they mocap him.
I'm pretending I know what this all means.
Yeah.
So say yes, that's very interesting.
Yes,
there we go. Great. moving on, we also had a new Battlefield 1 trailer, which is, I think that's probably my highlight from this week, because it's the first time you really get, I mean, it's a 2-minute clip, but it's practically all gameplay from the game. It's all captured in game, and it just looks, the graphics are incredible. You know, the actual gameplay looks amazing. You know, with Call of Duty going to space, and Battlefield 1 taking it right back to World War 1. There's such a contrast between these two games.
That sounds quite cool, actually.
We talked about this before on the podcast about how some people are a little bit, I don't know what the word is.
Sick and tired. Futuristic space games.
Well, I was more going the other way, actually. That really? they're a bit sort of unsure about whether it's cool to have a game set in World War 1. When World War One is so sort of suffused with
all war is bad, right?
Tragedy.
Yeah, but, I know. Like, pick a good one. Which is a good war?
What's the best war?
The Vietnam War.
That is one of the best games.
Yeah,
wars. But World War One is particularly futile, idea of having a game where at the end of it you all go over the top and are mown down by machine gun fire.
Does that happen? Does it happen? that wow. you just go into.
Trench warfare. I saw a bloke with a sword.
I feel like that would be boring because it would be long periods of nothing interspersed with sudden death and destruction.
Or just getting suffocated by...
Yeah.
Oh, the football game would be good.
Yeah, you could have like a FIFA crossover.
Where they go and they play the football game that they did at Christmas time.
The lovely bit.
But there's a sensible soccer spin-off that was based on that. And there was all it was like black and white and the football became a grenade at one point so your players could get blown up. So it ended up as like 3-2 because everybody had been blown up by the grenade.
No.
It was amazing.
That's
years ago.
Heartfelt.
Wow. I'm not sure about that.
But that's going to be exciting, right? Battlefield 1.
Battlefield 1's going to be great, yeah. Because it's just a mix of lots of different... Because obviously World War 1 is kind of where weaponry started getting more and more advanced.
Yes.
So you've got people on horsebacks in the game with swords. You know, for close-up combat, but you've also got tanks, you've got armoured trains, which is the first time we've seen in-game.
Armoured trains.
They look scary.
They like
sealed
trains at that point of history, I seem to remember.
They loved
sealing things in trains and sending them off.
Is this just something that really does?
Like grain?
No, I mean as in like, well, with Russia, didn't they put Lenin in a sealed train at some point? I feel like there were sealed trains going around all over the shop.
I'm just imagining a train being driven by a seal now.
And with Lenin inside.
The war's quiet heroes. The unsung heroes
Lenin
of the war.
Lenin was there, Seal was there, no one knows why.
Soviet seals.
Yeah. Anyway, I want to talk about No Man's Sky.
Yeah, that's a game.
Yes.
Lewis has played it.
Because we talked about No Man's Sky last week, and none of us had played it, and we were really bluffing our way through. But Lewis knows about it and has played it. Is it any good?
Oh.
Damn.
It's a hard question to answer because...
Because it's rubbish.
It's just, I feel like it's been slightly mismarketed.
Okay.
So basically, I mean, I still really like the game. I think it's really impressive. You know, it's its own universe with 18 quintillion planets, which is a stupid number.
It self-generates, does it?
It's procedurally generated using mathematics, all that magic there. And it's really interesting because Hello Games is comprised of about 12 people.
Yeah.
You know, and considering these 12 people have had a few years just to create, you know, this entire universe with planet-sized planets and all the, you know, all that jolly good stuff inside
it. They're the classic. This is what an indie games company should do. Is that they made one amazing indie game, Joe Danger, and then people said, "All right, you can have a big budget." And then they were super ambitious and made an amazingly exciting game.
I mean, it's really fun because you get to, you know, you're flying around different planets. All these planets have unique properties. You'll never find two planets that are the exact same with the same plants and the same, you know, wildlife on them. And when you get to the planets, if you're the first one there, you discover it, which is always nice. And you can rename it, you can upload it. So if anyone else ever manages to find that planet in that huge universe, they'll see discovered by Lewis and then whatever I've called it.
That sounds really fun.
And
why is it? Because obviously it was hyped up a lot.
Yeah.
You couldn't really escape the hype.
No.
So what is it, if anything, you're disappointed by?
I mean, they never expressly said it was going to be a multiplayer game, but I felt that with a game where it's, you know...
I think they did once, actually.
Did they?
I think there's one interview where he says that you'll very rarely meet each other, but if you do, there will be some element of at least being able to see each other.
Yeah, ooh. I mean, because that's the... what's the word?
You don't want to share your universe with others, is essentially what you're saying.
That's a terrible thing to say.
Yeah.
But the issue is, I mean,
I'm suggesting that's what Lewis is saying.
Right.
It's kind of like Minecraft, basically. So, like, think of it like... Well, God, I don't know if this is a good idea, because you two are looking at me blankly anyway.
I know what Minecraft...
It's like Lego, isn't it?
We're not totally cut off from popular culture.
You mean both looked at me, like, really confused. Yeah. I was like, oh, God, I've stumbled on
confident about...
Don't lump me in with him.
I am the oldest.
Calm down, sir. Drinks a lot.
All right. Sorry. Getting a bit
Larry. Anyway, so think of it a bit like Minecraft. You know, Minecraft, you go around, you gather resources, you build stuff, and it's kind of a similar idea on No Man's Sky, but you upgrade your ship, your suit, and your multi-tool. So you go around
What's a multi-tool?
I should probably not skip past that. It's like your weapon. So you can mine with it, you can shoot with it. So it's got multiple uses. Multi-tool.
I think that sounds like a really fun game.
It is a really fun game.
I'd enjoy that.
It's just a bit slow because there's practically no storyline.
Right.
The aim of the game is to get to the center of the galaxy, and apart from that, you're just left to your own devices.
I think I'd like that, though.
Yeah, some people do really like it, but some people do like a more structured kind of thing.
Yeah.
And there are a few things that they've been teasing that haven't appeared in-game yet. Like, I mean, on the Steam listing, they've got a video showcasing the game, which obviously most Steam listings do, but... Mm-hmm. It doesn't look like that. Like, the UI is totally different, so I'm not sure whether they're using footage from, like, an old E3...
From earlier in the development.
...showcase or something like that, because it's definitely not how it looks in the game now. And I'm like, how can you get away with that?
Yeah, that's a bit cheeky.
It is a little bit cheeky.
We had better move on. I'm worried that we're running out of time. Talk to me about Final Fantasy.
Final Fantasy 15, the game that's been 15. In development for about 1,000 years.
Yeah. Is that the one that's been advertised quite heavily recently?
They're starting to ramp up with it now. Yeah. It's been in development. I mean, it was originally announced, I think, in like 2007, 2008, something stupid, ages ago, when it was just a concept.
I'm sure I remember playing Final Fantasy, like, 12 about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been doing them really slowly.
They didn't really ever mention a release date or anything like that. They didn't want to tie themselves to a date. And then I think it was either earlier this year or late last year, they said, yep, 30th of September, we're going to nail it. Cool. And then this week comes around and they're like, actually...
Delayed.
No.
Oh.
It's been delayed by 2 months. And I'm not sure if I'm happy with the reasoning, because the Golden Master, I think that's what it's called, that's done. They're happy with that. But they say they want to work on the day one patch, which a lot of big games have a day one patch where they add new features or fix some last-minute bugs they never catch. But they want to include that on the disc. Right. So they're saying they're going to give themselves an extra 2 months to work on the day one patch and then load it onto the disc so you don't have to download it when you get it.
That is sort of good, because it is really frustrating when a game... day one patches are themselves incredibly frustrating.
Oh, yeah.
Why aren't games all virtual rather than discs these days?
I mean, a lot of them are. You got digital downloads. I usually opt for digital downloads.
It's a long time since I played a game.
Do they still use cartridges?
No.
Well, this is one of the things I wanted to ask. Is that I understand that you're not really a gamer.
No.
Has news of this event penetrated out of the gaming bubble?
Not really, no.
No, it's not been big.
I mean, I'm aware, I'm vaguely aware that Gamescom is going on. But, I mean, when I was a teenager, I used to play Unreal and Half-Life. A bit.
Those are both excellent games.
And actually, I played Counter-Strike. That was a long time ago, and I don't really play anything anymore. So, I mean, maybe
you don't even play Pokemon Go.
I don't even play Pokemon Go. I don't play no games.
This is sad.
Yeah.
There's some sort of Pokemon announcement, isn't there? Pokemon Sun and Moon?
Yeah, well, it's a live stream that's taking place. Oh, God.
It's
happening today, but
we're
publishing tomorrow. So
it's happening in the past, listener. We are in the past.
Yeah. We are in the past.
So that's the DS, right?
Yeah. So it's a new Pokemon game coming out later this year for DS, and they're slowly releasing. You know, over the last few weeks, they kind of teased a few Pokemon that are there, and they're giving an extended look at gameplay at Gamescom this week.
Mm. Is Huawei one of the new Pokemon?
Huawei. You look so proud that you said that.
Yeah,
correctly.
Yeah,
I love that joke. And last of all, let's talk about virtual reality.
VR.
Your favourite subject.
Yeah.
Oh, ho, ho.
What's going on with that?
PlayStation VR's out soon. Sooner rather than later. So you've got 13th of October, it's out. You've got a lot of day one releases, which I'm quite surprised by, because when the Vive and the Rift came out, there was a few games to play, but there wasn't really a lot. It's kind of, 6 months down the line, now we've got, there's a variety of games, it's fine. But with PlayStation, they've really pushed having that content available from day one. Right. So there's going to be, I think it's about 50 games available at launch to download from the PlayStation Store. Mm. And various games that are out already are going to get updates in the future to bring VR compatibility. Mm. So there's one called Drive Club, which is a PlayStation game. And they're adding VR support later this year, so you'll be able to sit in the car when you're driving around. Mm. And it's really cool.
Are you going to be able to play No Man's Sky in VR?
See,
I reckon that would be brilliant.
Yeah. That would be amazing.
That would get me to get a headset and play it.
You've gone from being a complete non-gamer.
I know, but
dropping
now
I'm
No Man's Sky and VR.
Now I need to... Yeah, but I reckon that VR might be the kind of thing that would make me want to go back to gaming.
Yeah.
This is interesting.
It is really good.
Because I think... I've only had very little bit of experience with the Vive, playing a game that I can't remember.
And, would have been that Space Pirates thing.
Yeah,
Space
I think that, training. Yeah, yeah. And I thought that was really good.
That was really, that was one of my favourite games, I think.
So, yeah, I reckon
but that's interesting, because the barrier for entry for VR is very high.
Yes.
It's going to be expensive for at least a couple more years. So I wouldn't have thought that casual gamers would be that tempted by it, but it's interesting. That is interesting. There's far too much stuff to talk about with Gamescom. We're going to have to stop there. Obviously, all the rest of the detail will be on, I imagine, pcadvisor.co.uk, Lewis.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Is that right?
We'll find all the coverage.
Let's go around the room before we move on to another subject. What does everybody think? Gamescom is the game's bomb, or Gamescon? Charlotte?
The game's bomb, if that's a good thing.
It's not quite what I said, but I'll allow it.
Okay.
Rules are getting a bit more lax this week. I'm not totally happy with this. No. Henry?
GamesCon for me.
Oh no.
Soz.
Oh. No was.
Yeah.
Lewis.
I think I'm actually going to say GamesCon.
Oh, no.
There's a lack of press conferences this year. It's not as exciting as it was last year.
Oh, we were actually speaking about that specific thing. All right.
Well,
okay.
You can interpret it however
I just,
you
mine was just to games. Yes.
Yeah, guess games. Love, yes, love always games.
Games bomb. Okay.
Lovely. We'll have a quick break now, and then we shall talk about some phone security matters. Henry Burrell. Phone security isn't something most of us worry about, but should it be? What have BlackBerry got to say on the matter?
Well,
I probably should have been what has BlackBerry?
What have the BlackBerries done for us?
The BlackBerry strike again.
Well, yeah, companies are singing. I won't tread the well-trodden path of doing BlackBerry down. Everyone knows they're in a bit of trouble. But recently for PC Advisor, I reviewed their new Android phone. Mm. So it's not their first Android phone. That was last year's one that was called the Priv, which is quite a bad name.
Was it Priv or Prive?
I think it's Priv, and it stands for privacy.
Oh, I see, because I was thinking privacy.
Yeah, it's the Americanization, isn't it? Yeah. But this one's called something even snappier. It's called the D-Tech 50. Sounds like C-3PO's chum.
It does, actually. Yeah.
But the
problem... a rapper.
D-Tech 50.
That is definitely going to be my rap name.
Yeah. like it isn't already.
It's written in stone now. The problem I had with it is the way that it's been marketed, not necessarily what the phone is. The phone itself, it costs £275. It's a very middle-of-the-road handset. It's only a BlackBerry because it's got BlackBerry stamped on it. They actually borrowed the design from Alcatel, so there is an Alcatel phone out there that is the same design.
That's a bit...
And it's fully Android, so, I mean, unfortunately, being a bit cynical, the best thing about it is that it doesn't really feel like a BlackBerry.
Yeah.
But then the problem I have with it is that the line they've gone with is the world's most secure Android smartphone, which in itself is a little bit of a paradox.
Yeah, world's tallest midget, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because world's most humane Nazi.
Exactly.
I'll get loads of these. That was from... when I was at university, a student newspaper got into trouble because they were reporting on women's football, and they said that winning the Women's Football League was like being named world's most humane Nazi.
Oh.
Wow. That is all sorts of bad.
I mean, they didn't really get
away with it. They didn't really get away with it
then. Sorry, go on.
Never get away with it.
Right. The problem I have with it is the way it's been marketed, because, I mean, BlackBerry has trouble selling phones, so I think they're probably going to go for trying to reinstate themselves with some enterprise deals with this phone, farming them out to, like, suits. But I mean, itself isn't—it's not a bad phone. It just got my back up a bit about how they were marketing it, because obviously they're trying to get people to—they're playing on people's fears about security, yeah. And it got me thinking as to—is it actually adding anything to the phone that other phones don't have?
And well, what about it is so
this,
secure?
This is the thing—it doesn't really. So I looked into it, and okay, so like BlackBerry Messenger is really, really encrypted, but like no one uses that anymore. And so, like, WhatsApp is fully encrypted end-to-end, so is iMessage. And so all this phone actually does is it makes you slightly more aware than your average handset about how you have personally set up the security on your phone.
Mm.
So you go on the app. It has a specific app, which also was on the Priv, so it's not even a new feature.
So it's not even the most secure BlackBerry Android.
Pretty much.
This like Ringo not even being the best drummer in the
business. No, exactly, it is.
So, like, yeah, if you don't set a password or a security measure to open your phone, it has a big red X and it's like, you should have a password. And then it, like, gives you a link to somewhere in the phone to change it yourself.
Oh.
So, it points out a bit more if you have... what it regards as like a security hole in your phone, but it doesn't actually do anything about it. It's just prompts.
I don't think, I mean, I can see why they're trying to pitch that to enterprises, because I might be wrong, but I don't think the average consumer is either that aware or particularly cares about security versus design, ease of use.
This is the problem. And like the one thing it does say, I mean, it promises it, but I'm not sure that it is true, is that it has like the fastest security patch updates. It was claiming in some of its literature that they sent me that like, some companies take days, months, even years to update their security patches, which isn't true. But also, like, they're just saying if there is a security bug, they will.
I'm still waiting for an update. I've got a OnePlus 2 that's got some kind of Qualcomm vulnerability.
Oh,
and I'm still waiting for my update on that.
So it is a problem. But it's not a very sexy problem to market.
Yeah, I mean, and who really cares about that? Like, that's the kind of thing that I might care about, but would
like it won't stop you. Like, if somebody sends, like, if your long lost brother from Nigeria sends you an email and asks you for your bank code and sort code, like, it won't stop you sending him those details, right? It's just stopping you, like,
We can't stop you from being an idiot.
Yeah. Basically, yeah. Because, I mean,
but also, if it's an Android phone, then the patches will be distributed by Android, by Google, right?
Mm. Yeah. So I don't quite know how they would work.
So the issue with that has always been fragmentation of handsets.
Yes.
So having a BlackBerry handset rather than the Google P9 or whatever, something like that.
That's a Huawei P9.
Oh, well, there you go. I don't.
He doesn't know about
the Google P9.
You mean 6P,
Non-Apple,
I think.
Brilliant, of course. They all have these ridiculous names.
Yeah.
If you want a phone that's patched in a timely fashion, you get an iPhone. That's what I don't, and I'm really
acting editor of Macworld says.
I'm really struggling to be objective on this.
No, I know.
But I've been writing about iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Security this week, and it's really hard to recommend an Android phone on security grounds.
Yeah.
When iPhones are out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, people, you get those nags immediately as soon as there's a new update to iOS. So iOS users always patch much quicker than Android users do.
Yeah, iOS updates always, we always see figures, don't we, about the rollout and the uptake of new operating systems and
iOS 9, after 4 months, it was on 75%.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah, like, I think it's around 50% for people who are on Android Marshmallow at the moment, which is still the newest one open to the public. So it just means you've got loads of old operating systems out there.
Yeah, I'm on Oxygen, and I'm just there kind of looking back, like, update. Anyone?
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah, that's like the OnePlus skin over Android.
It's slightly, I don't know. It's kind of annoying because I know that vulnerability is there. And it might not be being exploited, annoying that
that's the most dangerous situation. It's like on Windows, it always used to be that there'd be patch Tuesday and then they called it Exploit Wednesday because the malware makers would just sit there and they'd say what all the exploits were and then they'd get out malware really, really quick before people had actually installed the so the company admitting
the BBC
that it was
has reported this vulnerability
and that in itself is dangerous
and I'm kind of a bit irritated because I'm like can you maybe tell the company so they can patch them and then say it existed, maybe.
Did anybody around the table choose their smartphone on the basis of security? Was it even a factor?
No.
What do you use, Lewis?
I use my iPhone 6S, of course.
So even an iPhone user wasn't actually influenced by its, I would say, extremely good security credentials.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not sure that it is a factor for most people.
No, I don't think it is. And I looked at their stuff just before we came in, and I wrote down one line that stood out for me, and it says, to market this phone, BlackBerry security that protects the private details of your life from being hacked. But it doesn't.
No.
It really doesn't. Because I think the problem with hacking, again, slight generalization, but it's not really on a individual personal level. Like the biggest hacks we see that are public, they're about databases being hacked. Mm-hmm. And the individual security of a handset won't affect the back-end security of somebody's servers.
Yeah, well, you're as secure as the weakest link in your security.
Yeah.
And if that's on someone else's database and they're not encrypting the data, then
Quite often the weakest point is the app developer. That's the biggest vulnerability for iPhones.
Mm. True.
Is that a lot of malware makers hacked into development frameworks that were then used by perfectly well-meaning app developers, and then people downloaded the reputable apps and then those turned out to be malware.
That makes sense.
So it is possible. You know, I really want to stress that iPhones are not 100% secure.
Yeah.
No.
They are, as far as I'm aware, the most secure.
Especially when they're jailbroken. Definitely not secure when they're jailbroken.
Don't get the FBI involved. It's a lot less secure in that instance.
Well, it's interesting you should say that, because that does, you know, obviously, as we were talking beforehand, Henry, the FBI case does show that Apple not only has the hardware to back up its pro privacy, pro security credentials, but it also behaves corporately.
Yes, that's true. Actually,
In a way, it takes risks. It takes risks with its personal reputation in order to protect its customers' data.
Yeah,
as it did in the San Bernardino shootings case.
Yes, they end up they sort of used a security contractor or whatever, and they managed to get around it.
Well, it's a very convoluted case. The FBI basically, to save face, claimed that they then used an Israeli they didn't say, but it was believed to be an Israeli security firm to hack into the iPhone 5C, it was.
Yep.
And then they said, "Oh, but we didn't find anything important."
Okay.
So it's possible that they just said that to save face. It's it's also possible.
It's a little bit lame. Like, no. We got in there anyway.
There was
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it does seem to me a little bit tragic for BlackBerry to be doing this. I feel like they should have done this a long time ago.
I said that in my review, actually. It's something they should have done probably about 5 years ago. But I was referring more to just using Android. They could have perhaps, not definitely, it's the complicated past they have, but perhaps saved a bit of their hardware legacy by just making that jump a bit sooner. Because the thing is, it's not a terrible phone. If it was maybe slightly cheaper... and slightly better made, it might be a bit more of an attractive proposition. But hanging it all on security, it's not very attractive to the consumer.
No.
And it's a BlackBerry.
Oh well.
It always
makes me feel sad talking about BlackBerry.
I know.
It always reminds me of that that song that all their executives did. You remember that karaoke thing?
Yeah, that's very cringy.
Tell app developers. What was the song? It was REO Speedwagon, Keep On Loving You.
I think so, yeah. Then all the presidents do a video for their employees. Oh, yeah, that was weird.
Oh. Didn't work out. I think that's enough sadness. let's go around the room. Always bet on BlackBerry. That's one for the Passenger 57 fans. Nobody?
No.
Was it Snatch film?
Oh,
about 1996?
I was four.
It's amazing. Wesley Snipes is like a police guy, and he's on a plane, and there's terrorists or whatever.
Yeah.
And this relates to our next subject. And he's ringing up the baddie
on his BlackBerry.
It has to be a wired phone. Yeah, it's in the olden days.
The olden days.
And he's on the plane, and he rings up the baddie, and he says, "Do you ever play roulette? It must be roulette. Ever play roulette?" And he goes along with it. He goes, "Yes, I do. Why do you ask?" And, and then the camera zooms in, and he goes, "Always bet on black."
Oh,
and
right.
It's like racial.
Oh, I see what you mean, because Wesley Snipes is black.
Black man. Wesley Snipes was awesome in the olden days, before he did the tax stuff.
Yeah, before he went to jail, yeah.
Anyway.
What was the question?
It's just turned into Wesley Snipes fan
Such
club.
A great film. Yeah. Always bet on BlackBerry, or that's not a BlackBerry good idea. Charlotte.
Always bet on BlackBerry BBM, because I used to love that, but nothing else about BlackBerry.
So you used to love it, do you not use it anymore?
No, sorry, no.
So really?
No. Well,
it's not a BlackBerry good idea.
Okay, it's not a BlackBerry good idea. Tried to be nice.
Henry?
It's not a BlackBerry good idea.
Lewis? It's not a BlackBerry good idea.
Brilliant, Unity. All right, we'll be back in a moment to talk about planes. Charlotte G, I get no kick in a plane. In fact, I hate that was a Frank Sinatra.
Oh, okay.
You people are so young.
I don't like Frank Sinatra.
Oh, come on.
No, don't like him.
I get no kick in a plane. In fact, I hate the things. Am I making a fuss over nothing? Or am I not scared enough?
Was that
voice too scary?
It was a little bit scary, I'm not going to lie. So this week on techworld.com, we published a story called... Great website. Is it possible to hack a plane, was the question. And the answer is yes, it is.
I'm hoping you're going to say, but it's difficult.
It's difficult, and it varies by model. That doesn't really help you very much.
Are we talking here about hacking a plane digitally while it's on the ground?
Right. So this is an interesting distinction, because the security experts that my wonderful colleague Tamin spoke to said that basically there isn't much evidence yet to say whether or not you could bring a plane down mid-flight. So a lot of the hacks that could take place would probably be more likely to be on the ground. But
that were then able to take it down mid-flight.
Sorry?
That were then able to take it down?
No.
Is this like a... We're going for a terrorist slant here. What's the angle? No, hacking a plane?
Actually,
or is it just like this
has been something we've been working on for a long time, and you'd be surprised how many times it's inappropriate to publish a story about hacking a plane, because there's been a lot of plane problems. But I should emphasise, there's no evidence any of those were hacks. We don't know.
But there was a case last year when a security researcher claimed that he hacked it, and he said, "Oh, I made it go left a bit."
and
this seemed like it was a joke. And then the FBI, what?
Don't worry.
I'm worried about what you just said. And the FBI arrested him anyway. And they looked on all his computers and stuff.
It's probably a good thing.
But I don't know if it actually happened.
Tamlin found one example from 2008, which was quite scary. It was like a Spanish airline, I believe, called...
Well, that's scary in itself.
Yeah. Span Air, I think. And there were some technical problems. He had an interview with Eugene Kaspersky, CEO of Kaspersky, and he said that during the on-the-ground check, the computer systems were disconnected from the server center because of a malicious attack. So there was an attack. The engineers didn't recognize the technical problems with the plane, and the plane crashed, and lots of people died. So apparently there has been a plane hack already.
That actually made it crash?
That actually made it crash, yeah. So yeah,
I wasn't expecting allegedly
that has happened.
Okay.
Wow. It seems from, and Hashem says, I really have no idea what I'm talking about. I'm basing this entirely on what security experts have said. It seems like the real risk sort of starts to take shape when people are using Wi-Fi in midair. Which
so we always get told could be turn off all your stuff going to airplane mode.
Yes, we do,
and we always thought that was ridiculous.
Yes, well, because now, like, maybe people have sometimes left phones on, right? Has anyone ever done that?
I actually have.
I have done that. I did that once.
Because I leave my iPad on, obviously. I felt
quite bad about it, but then nothing happens.
No. Except that. Are you talking about that they're more vulnerable if the plane service Wi-Fi itself gives Wi-Fi to the...
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess the point is that whenever you sort of talk to security people about whether or not something's secure, they'll always say to you, is it connected to the internet? Is there Wi-Fi, etc.? Because then it's kind of, is there a route into the systems?
Yeah.
So I guess in theory, that might be why that's more risky.
Because it's
mid-flight and, yeah. In-flight entertainment systems apparently are quite secure.
But they...
According to the people that we interviewed.
You've been trying to download the film.
Yeah, I've been there, like, oh, you know, trying to... No.
What I don't understand on a technical level is why the flight systems, why on earth they need to be connected to anything else?
Well,
it's like, why do they need to be on the internet? Why do they need to be connected to the in-flight entertainment system? Why don't you have two systems?
Well, they are quite separate. There were kind of like four different systems that Talon identified: the aircraft control domain, the airline information services domain, and then the passenger information entertainment bit and people's own devices. And those things are all quite separate at the moment. So the risk is where you start to link them together. I mean, you do have to have some communication systems. You have to communicate with, you know, like the aviation authority in the country you're going to and from. You might have to communicate with other pilots, potentially.
So if you could convince the system that you were ground control or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, it could also be something that's less of a risk from someone sitting inside the plane, but from...
Like in Die Hard 2.
Possibly.
It's an English plane that comes down, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah. But they do that pre-internet.
Yeah, I really hope that all listeners have been on their summer holidays. I'm actually going in a couple of weeks.
Because I remember when there was a bit of buzz when some hackers decided to, they for another publication, but they were going to hack like a Jeep when it was on the motorway.
Yes, so that was about a year ago.
Yeah, they kind of did that just to show they could do it.
Yeah.
But I didn't really get worried about that. Whereas, like, the plane thing, people might be more worried about.
I don't know.
Is there another reason that somebody would hack a plane, apart from malicious terror?
I can't think of many. I mean, you wouldn't do it for the lols, would you?
No.
The security researcher claimed he did it as a proof of concept.
Yeah, I mean, I can see it as a proof of concept or in a malicious attack, but I can't really see how you could do that in another way.
There's no other data on board, is there, that you would...
I think, actually, maybe you should be more worried about cars than planes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I don't drive, though.
Oh. Do you get on cars? You are driven. Henry doesn't drive, he gets driven.
I'm a pretty driven guy.
Yeah.
I get the bus sometimes.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I haven't...
Could you hack a bus? That's the question.
That's like speed.
Yeah.
You probably couldn't because they're so old and ropey. Or what about the new Boris
smart
buses?
Yeah, those are cool.
Bit too smart for my liking.
They go too far to the right.
Yeah.
That was political.
Oh, what about
that
Boris?
Was the joke I made.
Oh, okay. Sorry,
sorry. Sorry,
David.
The
humour is so subtle that it completely passed me by.
Right, so there's an interesting thing to talk about here, yes, about risk assessment and, yes, human misunderstanding of statistics.
Yes, yes.
Which is what I always love to talk about.
I love that as well.
When you're on a plane, you get scared. I mean, personally, I get scared when I'm on a plane because there's a sense of powerlessness. Because you feel like if you crashed, it would have nothing to do with your agency. You wouldn't be able to stop it. Whereas when I'm driving a car, even though it's statistically far more dangerous, I'm like, well, I'm good at driving. I'd just not crash, you know. Even though, again, somebody could just crash into me. There's something about this story that speaks to that. This idea that you'd be sitting on the plane and somebody just takes control of the plane and you would be able to do nothing. Mm. That I don't think... This is, you know, this is what you're saying, Henry, about you weren't scared about the car thing. I think it's because we sort of think, well, we're on the ground for one thing, so it doesn't feel as scary. But two, we'd be like, well, I could somehow avoid it because I'm driving.
Yeah.
Somehow,
unless you're not
sort of
driving,
human...
of course.
Well, I always insist on driving.
No, I mean, like, if it's a driverless car.
Yes. So, would you know how to hack a driverless car as well?
Would I know?
Just get in the front seat.
No, but I mean, I can work on it. I mean, I guess it's a bit like we sort of talked about this a while ago about the guy that had been killed in a driverless car. Kind of the moral of that story was not pay attention to the road. Basically, pay attention to the road is what I'm trying to say. I can see that's a really interesting point.
You depend on the technology too.
Yeah, exactly. Don't just rely on the technology blindly. I think the point you make about agency is a really good one. I hadn't really thought of that. About that's why we're so that's why we have this kind of primeval fear around planes, because it feels so out of control.
It feels
would hacking a plane involve like interfering with the autopilot system? Wouldn't there just be a manual override, something like that?
Oh, you mean so the pilots would be able to, if someone sort of took control. Yeah. I mean, it depends what they took control of, because it depends on the system.
Just kept flushing the toilet.
that would be annoying. That would be quite annoying.
Making the light come on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trying to sleep, damn it.
Yeah. I mean, if they like emptied the fuel, for example, I mean, there might be certain situations that...
Surely that wouldn't be something that could be done.
I don't...
Like in Air Force One.
I really hope not.
Do you know what? I don't...
So many plane films to talk about.
I know. I don't come here with answers. I just come here with questions.
You just come here with fear.
I just come here with fear. I'm bringing
the
fear.
I'm going to leave this podcast absolutely terrified.
I was going to say, you don't like flying, do you?
I hate flying so much.
Oh, really?
We're going to Berlin.
We send Lewis on many trips, I say to the listener, in glamorous, far-flung locations.
Yeah.
Is this going to stop you wanting to fly on planes?
I hate flying before this. And that is even worse.
I'm sure it's fine.
I'll hold your hand.
Can you offer any solace?
I mean, it's extremely, extremely unlikely. And also, I mean, potentially, if you really wanted to reassure yourself, you could go and look at the model of plane that you're getting and look at, like, the statistics. But in my experience...
But that might be a bad idea
It might be a bad idea in case... I mean, the problem is that people that are scared of flying don't really care about statistics. So it doesn't really help.
Because it is, as you said,
because I love flying because I'm alone in a metal box and I can watch TV.
That's really sad.
Yeah, I know. Well, no, just maybe my life is so sociable, it's nice to have a bit of downtime.
I think most people...
me and my TV.
I think most people are not like you, actually. I think most people are more scared of travel than they used to be.
Yes, I think so.
I was reading an article yesterday about the best jokes in Airplane. You seen that? I mean,
it's
another old film that you won't have seen.
I've seen Airplane.
And it's amazing how non-seriously they take air safety in that film, and they're making jokes about stuff that you would never ever make jokes about now.
Yeah.
You know, the people watching crashes and having crashes and all sorts of the rest of it. Even though in those days air travel was much more dangerous. We are essentially irrational when it comes to I'm the same.
But you see all those pictures of like Pan Am in like the 60s and everyone's just smoking and like there's like two seats on either side and there's like a gangway in the middle and people are just like having martinis. It's great.
Amazing.
But now, like, obviously it's scary to hear something like, can you hack a plane? But also, technology has made air travel so much safer.
It really has. Yeah. And I mean, essentially, I think it's more a potential future threat that we must make sure we kind of include security from the beginning as advances go on, rather than something that's a real present danger. I think it's more as we connect more things to the internet and as the technology gets more complex, let's make sure we make it secure. Bake in security, that's what they like to say.
They should have done Terminator.
Yeah. So don't worry. It'll all be fine.
I think this is a nice place to stop on a reassuring, happy note. Yeah. We'll quickly go around the room. The question is, a load of hot air, or that, as in the threat, a load of hot air,
yep.
Or I ain't going on no plane, you crazy fool. And if you do that, when you have to do a Mr. T voice.
Okay. I ain't going on no plane, you crazy fool.
That was not a brilliant Mr. T voice.
I mean, I want to do it, but I think it's a lot of hot
air. I started strong and it got worse.
Yeah. You can say that in a Mr. T voice.
It's a lot of hot air.
It's good.
Thanks.
There is. I ain't getting no plane, you crazy fool.
That was brilliant, good. Brilliant. That was good.
Okay. Well, I think we'll stop it there. Thank you for listening to this edition of the UK Tech Weekly podcast. Feel free to get in touch and let us know your thoughts and opinions. To shake us down for cash, I still don't know what that means. Or if you're interested in advertising,
I don't carry cash.
You can tweet us on any of those topics using the handle @UKTechPodcast. Or you can email us on editor@idg.co.uk. We will be back next week with more informed opinion on the hottest topics in tech. If that sounds like something you'd like, find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and all the other podcast sources. And don't forget to subscribe, comment, like us, and tell your friends. Until then, say goodbye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.